Great. You know, this is the place where he became Alexander the Small. And they were invaded by the Mongols, three times by the Britons, one time by the Soviet, and now by the US-led coalition, as you said, NATO forces. So for them, this is also a war to fight being invaded, a war to end wars. And finally, very important, the Durand Line drawn by the British Empire through Pashtun territory, 40 million Pashtuns, maybe the highest minority in the world, which doesn't have a state. They don't recognize that line at all. They're not foreigners crossing from Afghanistan into Pakistan. That's some kind of Washington illusion. They're in their own territory, Pashtun territory. Now, how do you solve that one? Pakistan is not going to give territory to Afghanistan. Afghanistan is not going to give it to Pakistan. You solve it by having a Central Asian community, making the border irrelevant. So Central Asian community, a deeply federated Afghanistan, neutral, non-aligned, with security forces cooperating from OIC and the United Nations Security Council. I guess that's the future. Now, I'm sitting here in the U.S., a country I love, and it's so sad to see that the U.S. sees only enemies everywhere, instead of putting its wonderful minds to solving the conflict. They could sponsor a conference without running it to explore a Central Asian community, non-alignment and things of that kind. And they could cooperate with Turkey, Iran, Pakistan, Russia, China in doing so. Somewhat less India, because there are the concerns about Kashmir come up. Why does the U.S. have to see enemies everywhere and always react violently? The solution is at hand. It's not at all complicated. And these people, Taliban, they don't want to kill people in the U.S. They want to preserve their own autonomy and be themselves. And they're struggling for that. I must say, when I talk to them, I find them rational. Sometimes their Muslim terminology is difficult for me to understand, but I find it very easy to talk with them. I have more difficulties getting good contacts in Pentagon and State Department. That is where the doors are closed. But I had contact with a U.S. general. It was stopped for some reasons that somebody higher up may know. Found him very intelligent, very sensitive, very compassionate too.
Johan Galtung, we have to break here, but we're going to continue the conversation post-show, and we're going to link, put it online at democracynow.org. Johan Galtung is the Norwegian sociologist, founder of Peace and Conflict Studies. His granddaughter survived the killings in Norway. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. Democracy Now! Produced by Mark Burke, Renee Feltzer, and Monte Nemici, Steve Martinez, and Malkoff. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. This is Democracy Now! Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
Hi, this is Donna from Jazz on the Air with your WUSB concert billboard for Monday, April 16th. Neon Trees will be at the Bowery Ballroom in New York, 7 p.m. This is your concert billboard for Tuesday, April 17th. Tower of Power will play two shows at B.B. King's, 7:30 and 10 p.m. in Manhattan. Sugar Blues Harpin, 8 p.m. and 10:30 p.m. at B.B. King's in Manhattan. Guster and Jeff Garland will be at the Power Mount in Huntington Village at 8 p.m. Neon Trees will be at Bowery Ballroom, 7 p.m. Casey James, The Farm, and Lisa Matassa will be at the Patchogue Theater at 8 p.m. Further will be at the Beacon Theater in Manhattan, Tuesday and Wednesday, 7:30. This is your concert billboard for Wednesday, April 18th. Tower of Power and War will be at the NYCB Theater at Westbury, 8 p.m. This is your WUSB concert billboard for Thursday, April 19th. Dee Snider's Jam for Autism, 8 p.m. at the NYCB Theater at Westbury. Need to Breathe will be at Webster Hall, 7 p.m. at the Grand Ballroom in Manhattan. Spanglish Fly, Williamsburg Salsa Orchestra will be at the University Cafe, 8 p.m., right here in Stony Brook. Marcy Geller will be at the Hard Luck Cafe, 7:30 p.m. at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington. David Jacob Strain at the Grey Horse Tavern in Bayport, 8 p.m.
This has been today's Concert Billboard. Tune in each day to find out when your favorite performers are appearing in the WUSB broadcast area. The online version of Concert Billboard can be found at WUSB.fm and has an upcoming schedule months ahead so you know what to look forward to. You could also find the WUSB Concert Billboard group on Facebook. Concert Billboard is a service of WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook, and thank you for listening.
Yeah, this is WUSB Stony Brook, 2 minutes after 6 o'clock, time once again for Off the Wall. Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this sweltering Tuesday afternoon. My God, it's 92 degrees in here still. I just cannot believe it. Week after week, it's like we're a little oasis here that nobody hears. You know, we should put up a big sign saying, "Hey, university, stop pumping heat into this place. Our equipment's being destroyed. Our people are fainting." I think it's some kind of psychological warfare that's going on here. But wow. Okay. Well, I have special reasons for being miserable today because wow. Well, okay. Interesting story that unfolded yesterday a little bit for me. I mean, I kind of knew something was up because well, let's see. How do you get started on a story like this? I went to the allergist yesterday. I know I've been allergic to things. I suspected I have asthma. And I found out yesterday when I took a breath test at the allergist. The little computer came up with the figures. And it said that my lungs were more than 84 years old. Yeah, my lungs are more than 84 years. Can you imagine that? And I looked at this on the computer screen, and I said, what does that mean? Oh, that means your lungs are... no, really, what does it mean? No, that's what it means, sir. Your lungs are greater than, not even 84 years old, greater than 84. It could be 85, could be 95, who knows? Unbelievable. And I got to say, one thing that sort of, I guess, shines a positive light on all this, it doesn't feel that bad. I mean, to be 85 years old doesn't feel that, I mean, I figured it would feel a lot worse. But no, it really doesn't feel that bad. I mean, it doesn't feel great because obviously there's problems breathing when you have asthma and when you have allergies. And the thing is, I didn't even know for sure if I had asthma because here's the way it works in this country, in the American healthcare system. You go to your doctor, you say, yeah, you know what, I think I might have asthma. Oh, here's a prescription to relieve those symptoms. Now, you see what's missing in that whole thing. What's missing is the actual diagnosis. I made the diagnosis. I said, yeah, you know what? I was on the internet, and I think maybe I have asthma. Well, here's the medication. And the thing is, I learned this yesterday. The medication is actually covered 100% by insurance. In fact, it's kind of weird because the pharmacy keeps calling me with refills, and I haven't even used up the first one yet because I'm not... I don't believe in using a lot of drugs. I believe in using what you need to get by. And the minimum amount, not the maximum amount. But apparently they want me to use the maximum amount. They keep calling me with more, and it's covered, so it's not even costing me anything. But yesterday I found out from the person who actually knows what's going on. Number one, yes, you do have asthma. Took me going in there, having to pester people to make an appointment to find out, yes, you know, this is what you have, because nobody else would even follow up on it. But then I found out that the medication... Which is called Ventolin, actually. Actually, it doesn't help. It doesn't do anything for the actual illness. It relieves the symptoms for a bit, but then you need to take more and more, and it has less and less of an effect as the years go by. Yet, here is the medical establishment and the pharmaceutical establishment telling me, yeah, you have to take this. This is what you have to take over and over again, and we're going to give it to you. We're not even going to charge you anything. Yesterday, I found out that there's actually medication you can take that will treat the actual asthma itself and bring my lungs back to where they should be. And in fairness, I didn't take anything yesterday, so I wanted my lungs to be as bad as they possibly could be so that I could demonstrate just what it was that I actually had if I had anything. A lot of people, when they go to the doctor, they try to be as healthy as possible. I try to be as unhealthy as possible because that's how you find out things. You know, who are you trying to impress? You know, what, is that a bad cough you have? Oh, no, doc, it's nothing. I'm not even going to cough for you. No, I'll cough all over the place just to show that, yes, I've got a cough. And what are you going to do about it? So in this particular case, yes, I did not take any inhalers or any allergy medicine or anything. I was miserable when I went in there. And I proved it. Lungs of an 85-year-old, yeah. So now, finally, the wheels are rolling. But guess what? The medication that actually treats the disease, makes things better, isn't covered by insurance. No. No, they're not going to cover that. They'll cover the drugs that won't really do anything and they'll make you more dependent on the drugs, but they won't cover the drugs that treat the problem in the first place. That is our healthcare system. It's amazing. It is really incredible. So yeah, but you know, I'm taking this all in good stride because you know, I know how I feel. I know that this isn't a crippling thing. In fact, I was just riding my bike down to the South Shore and back, no problems, working out on Stairmasters, things like that. If I can do that at 85, imagine what I can do if I bring my lungs back to where they should be. And fortunately, with the right treatment, that's exactly what I can do. But the thing is, I never would have even learned this if I had just listened to doctors who had just handed me prescriptions for things that don't really treat anything. I had to go make the assessment myself and say, you know what, I want to see a specialist. I want to find out what's really going on here. I'll wait the months it takes to get an appointment. I'll pay whatever I have to pay because my insurance is going to say that this isn't important. But in the end, I'll find out something. And that's what people need to do. They need to take it into their own hands and not take no for an answer. So many of us are afraid of what things will cost and how we're ever going to cover it. And, you know, there are certain things that I think we have the right to. We have the right not to starve. We have the right to live in a free society. We have the right to be healthy. And that cannot be extorted from you. That cannot be something that is just taken away because you don't have enough money. Sometimes stealing is completely right and appropriate. And when it comes to matters of staying alive and staying free, it's whatever you can do to make that happen. And that's how I feel. And I'll be, I'll try every trick in the book to make something work out, but I will not take no for an answer. And I will demand the same kind of care that the president gets as far as assessing health and getting all the right tests and getting the treatment and getting whatever drugs are necessary, if drugs are necessary. And I think if people just stood up for this and demanded health care, they would get it instead of all this nonsense that we're going through right now. We're debating whether or not people resent being told that they have to get health care instead of addressing the real problem of people losing their homes because they get sick and all kinds of other nonsense. But what do I know? I'm just an 85-year-old that is spouting forth with all kinds of rhetoric. I'll say this, though. They said that you really should avoid hot, humid places. And here I am. It's over 90 degrees inside here. Let me just say to the listeners, if I collapse and I don't recover, please sue the university on my behalf. I'm not sure how that would work exactly, but I'm sure enough people will get together and maybe a class action suit. No, that's not right. Some kind of a suit, probably against the trustees of the state of New York or something like that. Don't let me die in vain. Anyway, I didn't want to talk about my health issues. Although, you know, when you get older, I guess that's what you talk about more and more. I'm actually feeling very positive about this because it's good to actually have a conversation with somebody who is on your level as far as what you want to get done and how you want to get it done, and will answer questions and not make you reliant on drugs to solve all the problems. There's all kinds of other things that you can do. And I'm going to go back in a couple of weeks and see how young my lungs are then. But, I've gotten a little preview of what it's like to be 85, at least breathing-wise. I'll say this, though, and this is the question that always came up over and over again, was whether or not I smoked. And I got to tell you, had I said yes, or had the answer been yes, I wouldn't lie about that, the prognosis would be very, very different. Very different. Now, I've been... I'll get into this maybe a little bit later. I've been watching a lot of old television, Twilight Zone episodes. Yeah, I got the DVD set. It's awesome. It's amazing. You can see all kinds of history. You can see all kinds of really good stories and all kinds of actors. And what happens is I watch an episode, then I look up on the net, okay, whatever became of this guy? Whatever became of this actor? Most of them aren't around anymore because this was a program that aired from 1959 to, I believe, 1964. And... I guess a lot of them are middle-aged then, so they would be, not around anymore. Some still are, but so many of them, including Rod Serling himself, died young. By young, I mean in their 50s or even earlier sometimes. 60s I consider to be young, too. And so many times the cause was emphysema, lung cancer, things like that, things that are brought on by smoking. There is no question that smoking killed these people. And, of course, being exposed to secondhand smoke killed a lot of people as well. No question about this. You can debate it all you want, but medical facts are medical facts, and this stuff is not good for you. And if you looked at those old episodes, and you can look at any old television show, you'll see everybody is smoking all the time. In commercials, in the programs themselves, everywhere. And those of us who are older than 10 probably can remember that people used to smoke a lot more around here. It used to be... smoking in every train that came out to Long Island. Then there was a smoking car, and then that was gone. And every time this happened, certain people would be outraged that our rights are being taken away. The same thing we always are hearing. Every time something good happens, somebody claims their rights are being taken away. You know, the common good is the common evil to them. So having a society where people aren't constantly breathing in foul air is to them a bad thing. And that foul air is their form of expression, which I agree with. It is foul air when they express themselves. But there's no reason, and there's certainly no reason we should feel guilty about it, but there is no reason that we have to tolerate that. And we haven't. And you see the results. They complain every step of the way. They complain when no smoking signs were put up. They complain when warnings were put on cigarette boxes. They complain when advertising was banned. They complained when it was segregated to a single car. They complained when the single car was eliminated and no smoking was allowed at all. They complained when smoking wasn't allowed in half of the restaurant. They complained when it wasn't allowed in all of the restaurant. They complained when it wasn't allowed in bars. But you know what? They always were able to get their puffs in somewhere. That's never gotten away. That's never gone away completely. And the world has survived, and we're getting healthier as a result. Now, the thing is, what I was going through, had I been a smoker, my lungs already would have been damaged to a degree where recovery wouldn't have been as probable. Let's put it that way. A statistic I read, and I, you know, to be honest, I can't say 100% whether or not this is true, but this is something that I read once, and maybe a listener with more time can look it up and see if there actually is any truth to this. But I heard that when you reach the age of 30, your lungs basically lose 1% of their capacity for every year beyond that. Okay, so basically you're operating at 100%. When you hit 30, it turns to 99%, 31, 98%, et cetera, et cetera. Now do the math. When you get to be 80, your lungs are about half the shape they should be in, which, you know, sort of parallels to what the test I took yesterday showed, about 50%. I mean, you can survive on that. It's not pleasant, but it's you can live on it. If you're a smoker, a regular smoker, that number, instead of being 1% at age 30, is 2%. So add 50 to 30, you get 80. Multiply 2 times 50, the number of years that pass, you get 100%, which means you can't breathe at all when you're 80. If you're a smoker. Now, that, of course, that's not true. There are lots of people who have smoked all their lives, and it doesn't affect them in the same way. But there are so many where it does affect them. And in this society where so many people seem to be getting asthma and all kinds of other air-related diseases, well, we're foolish if we don't take care of our lungs. So that's something that I learned from all that. Okay, now, we have all kinds of other issues not relating to my senior citizen lungs that are going on. The Trayvon Martin case has progressed. George Zimmerman was charged last Wednesday with second-degree murder. And 45 days it took. 45 days after the shot was fired for charges to be filed. 45 days where he was free to do whatever he wanted. And it was only because of voices being raised loudly that anything happened in the first place. And you have to wonder, why? Why is that what it takes? And how many other cases have gone down in history without a crowd of people finding out about them and demanding justice? It shouldn't take a crowd of people, but it still does. And I got to tell you, it's distressing, not only the problems in getting the case to be heard in the first place, but in the reaction of people. In the reaction of people to what's going on now. I mean, all you have to do, I'm not going to do this on the air. I could do it on the air, but I'm not going to because I don't want to give it any more publicity. Years ago, I was complaining about Newsday, the local newspaper here, that decided that every story was open to anybody saying whatever they wanted on the same page as the person who actually did the research and wrote the article. And they still do that to a degree, and you still get the morons who just like to hear themselves speak and really say horrible things. Well, CNN has been doing that a lot more than Newsday. Newsday actually cut back on their message board that is under some articles, at least. CNN seems to have it under every article now, so which that means that every single story that CNN puts on their website is tainted by a bunch of redneck idiots that inject race and homophobia and all kinds of ignorance and intolerance into any subject you could imagine. But particularly with the Trayvon Martin case, where if you go to any story about that particular incident, you will find the majority of people, and by majority, I mean nearly 100%, saying George Zimmerman is a hero, saying it's time that we get all these people out of the cities and horrible things. I'm not going to say what they say, the things that are tolerated. But as far as I'm concerned, as long as that remains attached to a story that CNN has written, it's got CNN's name on it. And I will not frequent any website or any organization that tolerates that kind of a thing. Not every opinion is worthy of being broadcast around the world. There are some opinions that are just invalid. The facts are wrong. They are offensive. They should be ignored, not spread around. This isn't saying that people aren't allowed to be idiots, to say whatever they want to say. Yeah, say that. But you don't have the right to have some other organization spread it around the world for you. Run your own website, say whatever horrible things you want to say, and the people who like what you say, they can gather with you. But the problem with this, and it relates to what we were talking about over the past couple of weeks concerning gun issues, is that people on the other side of the issue give up. They walk away. And then the side that at one point seemed somewhat outlandish becomes the mainstream. You know, an example I always like to give, again relating to old television, this time from the 1970s, when airplane hijacking was actually a topic of discussion because it was happening a lot, not on the terroristic level that we associated with today, but basically for some reason people were hijacking planes and demanding to go to Cuba. That happened a lot. And on the television show All in the Family, which is one of my favorites, and I think it's aged very well, and you could never do anything like that today in today's politically correct society. But I think we benefit from these kinds of honest debates and discussions. You had the conservative character, Archie Bunker, who was mostly ridiculed on the program, coming up with this outlandish proposal that to stop airline hijacking by simply giving every passenger a gun. Yeah, you hand out the guns when they board the airplane, and you take them back when they leave, and that way nobody will hijack a plane. It was funny. It was meant to be preposterous. It was meant to show how insane things can get. And now today, people argue for things exactly like that. The more guns, the better. It's become almost the mainstream. I say almost, out of hope. Because I keep thinking that all these people that have abandoned the conversation and walked away will come back and say, wait a minute, hold on a second, what are you guys talking about? This is insane. But it can happen. Silence is complicity, and if you walk away from something, you can't be surprised when it all goes to hell in your absence. So, that's... progress in that case. There's definite progress in the case, but regression in the way we're showing ourselves to the world. And I still, I'd like to think that it does not represent a significant number of people, just a bunch of people that know how to be loud and abrasive and make it seem as if they represent more than they do. Now, the NRA has finally started speaking. A top National Rifle Association official has thrown some sharp criticism against the national media last Saturday accusing it of sensationalizing the Trayvon Martin case and ignoring other crimes that happen across the country every day. NRA Executive Vice President Wayne LaPierre didn't mention the Martin case by name during his speech at the group's annual meeting in St. Louis, but he accused the media of sensational reporting from Florida. And I don't think he was talking about the Miami Marlins coach saying he loved Fidel Castro. No, he was talking about this case. We know he was. The 17-year-old Martin was unarmed when he was fatally shot on February 26th in Sanford, Florida, by Neighborhood Watch volunteer George Zimmerman, who claimed self-defense. Now, until Saturday, LaPierre had declined to comment on the Martin case, citing a need to learn all the facts. Now, during the NRA gathering, he called the news media a national disgrace. He said violent crime is an everyday fact of life in every American city. And they should know. They pretty much sponsor it. But the media, they don't care, LaPierre said. Every day victims aren't celebrities. They don't draw ratings. They don't draw sponsors. But sensational reporting from Florida does. In the aftermath of one of Florida's many daily tragedies, my phone has been ringing off the hook with calls from reporters. Now, the leader of this group known as the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, named Dan Gross, says George Zimmerman, the shooter, is the NRA, and Florida's shoot first, ask questions later law and the paranoid mentality it promotes are products of the NRA's vision for America, where just about anybody can get and use a gun just about anywhere. NRA Executive Director Chris Cox defended such self-defense laws during Saturday's meeting, recalling the case of Sarah McKinley, who was alone with her baby in her rural Oklahoma home when an informer armed with a hunting knife broke down the door. McKinley shot and killed the man. Castle Doctrine can literally save your life, Cox said. Well, you know what? If such a case actually happened, and I don't doubt that it did, yes, it can. It can save your life. And we're just as bad if we don't focus on where it works. In fact, I'll even go a step further and pull up another story where it worked. Hang on, I've got a lot of stories here. Okay, here we go. This comes out of the state of Washington. Armed homeowners have reportedly driven off would-be intruders in three more western Washington cities. The incidents a couple of Thursdays ago follow Wednesday's shooting at a Paul Yelp home where a retired police officer who was awakened by intruders shot and fatally wounded a man who reportedly threatened him with a crowbar. At Bonnie Lake, police officer Todd Green says a man first heard someone ringing his doorbell Thursday, then kicking the door. He grabbed a shotgun and confronted the intruder, who fled in a pickup truck. The homeowner says he fired. Police say there was no indication whether the truck or the intruder was hit. In Gig Harbor, an Army veteran says two young men rang her doorbell, then tried to open a sliding glass door. Angela Talman tells King TV she grabbed her gun and tapped on a window to make sure they saw the weapon. She says they both ran off. Federal Way police say a resident came home Thursday to find an intruder in his house. King TV reports the homeowner armed himself and confronted the man, who ran and jumped into a nearby lake. The intruder was later rescued from the water and arrested. So yeah, you know what? There are stories like this. It does happen occasionally. Now, as you can see, in at least one of these cases, all you had to do was show a gun. That was enough. Don't actually need a real gun, just an image. Okay, fine. Whatever works. Of the cases, I see people fired when there was no indication that the other person even had a gun. But, you know, you're inside your house. If somebody is inside your house, not many people would argue against a lethal show of force. Of course, mistakes happen all the time, and you wind up shooting your kid instead, who came in late one night. That happens too. So for every one of these stories, there's probably 100 other stories. Well, let's see. I have some of those, too. How about this? A police officer was shot and killed early Friday at a Walmart in Central Texas. The officer was shot in the neck and died at the scene. He was responding to a call about a drunk man inside the store at around 2:30 a.m. The suspect attacked the officer as soon as he arrived at the store. And the officer did not even have a chance to pull out his own weapon. The suspect produced a semi-automatic pistol and shot the officer at point-blank range. Right in the Walmart in Austin. Yeah, so, you know, even in a situation where you have a cop who has all the arms he could possibly need and is prepared to use them, all it takes is somebody with an advantage. And that advantage takes milliseconds. You see somebody first, that's an advantage. You move a little bit faster, that's an advantage too. So it doesn't actually solve the problem. It solves the problem if you can come upon somebody by surprise and they don't know that you're watching them. But there are so many more cases where it doesn't help at all. And many more cases where it makes things worse. And how about this? New Hampshire man killed his girlfriend and himself after allegedly killing a police chief, injuring four other officers in a hail of gunfire. The chief medical examiner in Greenland, that's in New Hampshire, said on Saturday that it appears Cullen Moultrie shot his 26-year-old girlfriend to death and turned the gun on himself. And earlier, he allegedly opened fire on officers who had come to his home with a search warrant of what was believed to be a drug bust. The town's police chief, Michael Maloney, was killed in the shooting, and four other officers were injured. Officials say they entered the home Friday morning after a tense overnight standoff and found the two bodies. So, again, having all the arms in the world doesn't really help when you have this kind of a situation. But what would help is not making it so easy for the people who become unhinged to do this kind of a thing. The 10-year-old daughter who survived a shooting Thursday night inside a crowded Cracker Barrel restaurant in Ohio by her father, that also killed her sister and mother, remains in critical condition in a Cleveland hospital. Kevin Allen came into the restaurant in suburban Brooklyn. Yes, they have a Brooklyn there, with a shotgun. Witnesses said he selectively fired on his family. The shooting created panic and confusion in the restaurant. The manager helped people get out through a rear door. He didn't say not one word. He came in and pointed. And we could just see the fire come out of the barrel, and we all just ran, said one witness. So again, you're going to have situations like that. This is all within the last week. And these are just the ones I was able to find before the program. Yeah, I guess if the 10-year-old had been armed, maybe she could have drawn quicker if she had had maybe an Uzi or something like that. But I don't think that's very realistic, do you? We clearly have a severe problem with violence and with people having ready access to implements that make perpetrating such violence so much easier. And the answer just isn't to get more and more, because that's the same thing as the arms race on a global scale. It's the exact same thing. And, you know, watching these old programs back in the early 1960s, that was on people's minds a lot. Because in the early 1960s, all people could think about was the prospect of nuclear war, because it was drummed into their heads. There were air raid shelters everywhere. There were Conrad radio stations. Yeah, Conrad. Was it 640 and 1240 on the AM dial? That was a system. It predated EBS, which was the predecessor to the current EAS system. Basically, in the event of incoming missiles, which we were expecting at any moment from the Russians or the Chinese, because we were at loggerheads with both of them back then. But what happened, a station like ours, for instance, would announce that we're going off the air now. tune to your local Conrad stations, which could always be found at those two frequencies on the AM dial. Now, the reason for this is because apparently radio transmitters could be used by the enemy to help target particular areas. And by turning them off, you confuse the missiles. That was the thinking. So what would happen instead, stations would kind of take a round-robin approach, and they would become the Conrad station for a particular period of time, and then they'd sign off. Another station would start broadcasting at one or both of those two frequencies, getting information out that way. Yeah, that was life back then. And it was seen as an inevitability that this kind of a thing would happen at some point because, well, man has never built a weapon that he hasn't used, right? Somehow we survived that period. Somehow we survived the 1980s. And somehow people got their countries back. They didn't get their countries back by a whole lot of shooting. Look how the Iron Curtain fell. It wasn't with guns. It was with people power. And by getting the army to take your side. That's how you change societies. These days, anyway. Certainly not in the 1700s when a lot of these documents that people point to were written. But that's how it works these days. So, looking at these many presentations where nuclear horror was just a moment away, you have to wonder, why aren't we as concerned about that today? The threat is still there. It might not seem as imminent, but that's exactly when the surprise can happen, when you don't think it's a threat. Now, you see how we're getting all freaked out over North Korea launching. Can I do this? I wanted to do this earlier. It's a special time in North Korea. 100 years since the birth of Kim Il-sung, the great leader, the first president of North Korea, the eternal president of North Korea. His birthday is on April 15th, and this past Sunday was the 100th anniversary of his birth. He was born in 1912. And I got to tell you, having been to North Korea myself, those people know how to throw a party. They go nuts. They go all out. Yeah, you know, we can fixate on all the misery and horror, and that's certainly not something to be minimized in any way. But at the same time, we have to realize that in order to reach people, you have to communicate with them. And it's important to talk. And what we're seeing a lot of people freaking out over the fact that they dared to launch a rocket. They wanted to launch a satellite. And somewhere there are UN rules that say that North Korea can't do that. They can't do that. They can't develop nuclear weapons or even a nuclear power program. But other countries can. And, you know, I'm not really in favor of most of those things. Well, satellites I have no problem with, but things that can lead to destruction or horrible accidents. Yeah, I kind of think that everybody should be encouraged not to do that. But it's hard to say that, well, one country can and one country cannot and keep a straight face, because who are we to say that? Who is anybody to say that? And how do you expect them to react when they're told they can't do that, like they're some insolent child? Probably they'll act like an insolent child and do it anyway. But the way that we are reacting to this reflects the great danger that that kind of a scenario could present. So yeah, we still realize that there's a horrible threat out there, but we think it's completely under control when it's really not. All kinds of accidents can happen. All kinds of accidents do happen. And the only way to really ensure that they don't happen is to get rid of these things. Very, very strong parallel to the explosion of guns in this country and other countries as well. You may think you need something to protect yourself, but in actuality, it'll wind up doing a whole lot more damage. especially if it's uncontrolled and everywhere. And I think we have to address both those issues in a similar way. Okay, we have the piece. Oh yeah. You know, I have enough of that music to play for an entire day, 24 hours, without repeating a single song. I have a source. And, wow, from North Korea. I don't know who that was, and if anybody knows what they were saying, please let us know. But I'm sure they're extolling the virtues of Kim Il-sung and all their other great leaders there. And, you know, to them, Kim Il-sung he's like Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, Ronald Reagan, and Jesus Christ all rolled into one. And it's... It's religion, it's fanaticism, it's politics, it's all kinds of things. And you'll find this even in the people who escape the country, that they hold this guy in high reverence. So I don't see how it would have hurt to say, okay, guys, you know, happy celebration or whatever on Sunday. Might have just made things a little bit less tense. It's not saying that all the horrible things going on there are acceptable, but it is acknowledging that so many people there believe in something, and it means a great deal to them. And that's really all they want, is to be acknowledged. So occasionally acknowledging people is a good thing. So yeah, you probably didn't hear about that very much over here, but I'm sure they had one hell of a shindig with millions of people in all coordinated colors and things like that. Let's read a little bit of listener mail, because we're almost out of time. I did want to say, though, that for those of you interested in learning more about the nuclear threat and the way it was presented back then, in addition to watching various episodes of Twilight Zone, which are really, really good, and learning about the production and the censorship that they always had to fight, there are a bunch of films. A few weeks ago, I mentioned I saw The Day After, which was an American film that came out in the 1970s, I believe, or maybe it was 1980s. About nuclear disaster here in the United States, global nuclear war. But there are also a couple of British pieces which are very much worth seeing. One is called Threads, which takes place at around the same time in the 70s or 80s in England, and shows this is really probably the most dramatic presentation of what nuclear strikes would do to mankind, and very realistic. Many, many scientists worked on this. Carl Sagan was one of them. And I recommend that. The other film is called The War Game. That came out in 1965. And it was produced for the BBC, but banned because they just thought it was too hot a topic and would offend too many people in the industry. And it did not show up on British TV for another 20 years. I'm not sure if it was ever shown over here, but definitely worth picking up on DVD. If they won't let you buy it for whatever reason, whether they won't let you play it on your DVD player or whether they won't sell it to you because you're in the wrong country, then download it. All right. I believe in paying for things until you're told you're not allowed to see it, then do whatever you have to do. Kind of similar to the whole healthcare philosophy there. Let's look at some listener email. Dear Emmanuel, I'm writing to let you know I'm really glad to have you back in the studio. Oh, yeah, you'd like me being in a 93-degree studio. That's nice. Thank you for that. The past several weeks have been great, and it's felt like too long since you've been in. Haven't I been here every week, though? I guess we've been in fundraising mode, so. But I still did a fair amount of bitching, so I don't know if it's much different. I really enjoy the travel shows, but the one thing that has kept me listening to Off the Wall through the years has been your insightful commentary on the myriad of topics you have covered over the years, recently that of gun control. It is indeed rare to hear opinions such as yours on the topic of gun control. Why is that? Why is that? I just don't get that. However, it is refreshing to know that people like you do exist. And I assure you that you are not alone. I hope not, because, you know, if I'm an endangered species, that makes me a little bit nervous. I've written in a few times before. You even read a couple of my letters over the air. And maybe one of these weeks I'll be able to make some time to listen live, perhaps even call in. It would be a great pleasure of mine to be able to speak with you someday. But until then, I'll keep listening as long as you keep speaking. On another note, I'm really looking forward to Hope Number 9. Hey, that could be a way that you can finally achieve that dream, because I'm going to that as well. And if you're interested in the next Hope Conference taking place in July, just go to www.hope.net and you will see what we have planned so far. And you'll have a chance to register as well and support the Electronic Frontier Foundation this month in one movement, because a certain percentage of ticket sales goes to support them. This will be my third Hope, and each one has been better than the last. My wife, Selena, will be attending with me this year, her first, and I know she's really excited. She's become a fan of yours as well as listening along when I listen in the car. It's her birthday on April 23rd, so maybe you could say happy birthday. If not, I understand. But she'll be ecstatic to hear her name over the air. Well, Selena, I hope you are ecstatic, because not only do I want to wish you happy birthday, even though it's technically not your birthday yet, but it will be very soon before you know it. But let's go a little crazy here. Selena, Selena, Selena. Yeah, we hired a band to sing your name over and over again when we wish you happy birthday. So, this is the kind of thing we do for our listeners, you know? We care. We're out there for you and wish you the very best. And thanks so much for listening and for calling in and writing in. And thanks, Brian, for that wonderful letter. And Brian, in fact, lives in Florida. So this proves that the state is not totally hopeless. There are all kinds of potential things there. And I would like to continue. I guess we can keep this playing in the background a little bit. All right. Other letters as well. Here's one that's interesting. I hope we have time to delve into this a bit. I'm writing in response to your April 3rd Off the Wall show about gun control to answer some of the questions you posed and to offer some insight to the conservative point of view on the issue, which is great. You know, I like talking different views, different opinions, and having open dialogues. I think that's a great thing. And I'm open to being wrong, too, you know? I'm spouting my opinion. And my opinion does change. So convince me, and who knows? You might get credit for changing my mind. For whatever that's worth. When referring to the Constitutional Amendment, you said, where is the well-regulated part of all this? And you posted a link to the ATF regulations. Well, okay, and that's at www.atf.gov/regulations-rulings. And that's all fine. I looked at that a little bit. It's a lot there. Boy, that's a lot of rules and regulations. But, you know, most of that has to do with who you can sell to and what kinds of people can import what to what states. And yeah, there's a lot there. It's also interesting. If you go on that site, you'll see a lot of anti-regulation commentary that people have written, because every letter that is, I guess, submitted gets posted on that site as well. Even the few regulations that they do have. When I say they have a lot of regulations, yes, there's a lot of words, but in reality, it's so incredibly easy to get guns that these regulations don't really go that far. But there are people who say that there's still too much and that there needs to be none or something like that. And it's true. I see another story here. We won't have time to get to this. 12 states are on the path to having guns with absolutely no permits. You know, so obviously there's a movement in this country to not have any kind of regulations whatsoever. All right, continuing with this letter, and we have to speed it up. And also, when I was referring to well-regulated militias, and we have yet to really talk about what these militias are or what they entail. A quote from me: bullets move very fast. If someone starts to shoot you, they'll probably finish shooting you before you have time to even reach into your pocket. And I believe we pointed to a couple of examples of that tonight. This is really a non-argument, says our letter writer. If someone wants to kill you, you might as well give up. Really? Plus, one man with a gun is very powerful in a room of unarmed people, but even if he kills his target, had it been in a room full of armed people, he's probably not likely to be able to kill another. You know, okay, that is true, but is that really how you want to live? Where everybody in a room is armed, and we're talking classrooms, we're talking church congregations, we're talking shopping malls, we're talking homes because people freak out inside their homes as well. I think basically if we even are considering that this is something that is necessary, that first we have to conclude that we have a serious problem in this country, a real serious problem. And maybe that's what we should be focusing on, is why do we feel that there's a need to arm yourself to protect yourself against other people who have armed themselves, and that at any moment you've got to be ready for some kind of a showdown, like it's the Old West. And I think that's what a lot of people want. They want that Old West mentality. And, okay, you know what? That's fine if that's how you want to live, but just don't do it around here. It's not the government saying that. Those are your fellow citizens. All right. Another quote from me. Every time you see that a murder was committed with a gun, that is an example of the harm that was caused by guns. To which this writer responds, every time you see someone die from a DUI accident, that's an example of the harm that was caused by automobiles. Well, actually, I have a question. And he says, no, that's an example of someone who is irresponsible and or dangerous using an automobile to cause harm. And that's a valid point. But relatively few people use their cars as bullets. They serve a completely different purpose. Transportation and pressing people and various other things like that. But the thing is, cars are also highly regulated in ways that guns aren't. So it kind of speaks to my point there. You can have your license taken away. You have to take a test before you can drive in the first place. But I do agree that, if this is in fact what you're saying, that it should be harder to drive a car to get a license. It should be something that is not just given to people. I see so many people doing stupid things with these vehicles of death. It's amazing that they live through the day, but they continue to be allowed to drive. And that shouldn't be. And when you equate that to the issue of guns, well, yeah, you have the same problem. People who simply are not equipped with the right either mental or physical capabilities to handle something. And yeah, it does need to be regulated. I also said the government will never take away everyone's guns. It could never happen, to which you was responded with a link to a Fox News story talking about police returning guns confiscated post-Katrina. I don't have time to read that whole story, but I will say that the cops say they took those guns that were stolen and stashed in alleyways, and if we entered an abandoned house and the gun was there, absolutely we took the weapons. And they took them from looters and burglars and people like that. And I imagine if you had a permit for a gun, they wouldn't have taken that. I don't see evidence. That story doesn't say that they did, that they took guns from people who were licensed gun holders. So not really sure what the point is of that. You cannot protect yourself from tyranny with guns because your guns are never going to do anything about the might of the military. That's another alleged quote from me. Number one, no one is afraid our boys will come in and kill us. Usually in history, when there's a tyranny taking hold, it's due to an outside force, either hired or motivated by the existing government or completely independent of it. It's been argued that Japan didn't invade the U.S. after it destroyed the entire Pacific Fleet because it wouldn't have had the resources to overcome the armed populace. I don't know about that. I think it would have been a real pain in the ass for them to do this, armed or not armed, and I think that there are plenty of military people left in the other parts of the country. But here's your second point. It's been proven time and again in history that although a heavily armed, well-trained army can be ridiculously powerful and efficient, it's almost never powerful or efficient enough to thwart an entire armed population. There's the French Revolution, American Revolution, et cetera, et cetera. 100,000-strong army with tanks and planes ain't got nothing on multiple millions of people with good old rifles, pistols, slingshots, etc. Well, it seems to be working pretty well in Syria, where people there are really not winning against all the tanks and planes and various other things that the government is using against their people. And the examples where it did work, how about something within the last 100 years? American Revolution, French Revolution, that's not doing it for me. You know, would things be better in Palestine if instead of rocks, we gave the kids guns? You think Israel would back off then? Don't think so. You think the Iron Curtain would have fallen any quicker if people had had machine guns or even rifles? No, the people on the streets, that did the job. They stood up. They took a risk. Civil rights movement, same thing in this country. Had it been an armed movement, I don't think it would have worked out very well. People arming themselves to protect themselves are proliferating the gun problem because they're adding more guns into circulation, to which you refer to the ATF gun walking scandal, which we don't have time to get into, but I will say that was just plain stupidity and incompetence on the part of the government. No question about that. Finally, anybody can become unhinged. Every single one of these people was a law-abiding citizen until they stopped being a law-abiding citizen. That was my quote, to which the response is, and when they stop being law-abiding citizens, you can take their guns. Since anyone can become a criminal, should we imprison everyone just in case? Well, here's the problem with that. It's kind of too late once that happens and they've mowed down an entire room full of people in about 5 seconds with their automatic weapons. Certain standards need to be maintained, just like with anything that requires specialized skills, in my eyes. I mean, people's abilities change. Just because you can drive a car today doesn't mean you can drive one next year. And it would be good to know where the arsenals are, you know, who has a huge amount of weaponry so that when they do become unhinged, cops aren't sent in to their death not knowing what they're facing. And if someone steals a gun, should be as serious as stealing a car, right? We should know about it. And yet we don't. I'd love to talk about this for longer, but we don't have time. And thanks, Joe Blow. You know, I'd take it a lot more seriously if you had a more serious name, but thanks for writing in and for raising these points. I'm sure we'll have time to get into them in future shows. This issue isn't going away. But I am. And I somehow survived the heat and humidity. And write to us, otw@2600.com. We'll see you next week. Bye.
WUSB 90.1 FM presents the Tuesday Night Rock and Roll Dance Party. Whether you're catting around to the rock and rollies of the 50s, stomping with the garage punks of the 60s, or tearing it up with today's modern maulers, plan to make the scene this and every Tuesday night, 9 p.m. until the midnight hour, right here on 90.1 FM, WUSB Stone.
This is Rock and Roll Radio. Stay tuned for more rock and roll.
How are you, say? Wap and Jabba. Roots, I am. Hey, Pete, walk one.
Just pull them.
Easy, Jed, you ready?
Steady now.
Come in.
Stony Brook Posse, wanna hear fresh. I wanna hear you say yes. I wanna hear you say yes. Long Island Posse, wanna hear fresh. I wanna hear you say yes. I wanna hear you say yes.
Fresh music, yes.
All those who wanna feel IRA, I can feel
fresh.
Fresh music, yes.
When the clock strikes 7 on a Friday night, rocking IRA ain't gonna make you feel nice. WUSB 90.1 FM.
On your FM, the Ross, Mike, Ross, Bob, and Easy Trip, they only bring you
fresh.
Bluesman culture and reggae music to make you feel
fresh.
All those who wanna hear rock, who's gonna hear it?
The sports section on terrorism.
Would you rather play without Charles Smith, or would you rather have him healthy?
Well, right now, the Knicks
bottom,
are...
No. Bottom line.
No.
Would you rather have him or not?
The Knicks are
bottom
in a state
line,
of disarray.
Would you rather have him or not?
No, I want Danny Manning.
Okay.
I want Danny Manning, because the
you
guy...
You can't have him,
The guy will at least score, though. Charles Smith plays no defense. Everyone says that he causes matchup problems. Yes, he causes matchup problems for his own team.
Is Danny Manning going to come into New York and unseat Patrick Ewing and take away his scoring opportunities? Because I guarantee you, if Danny Manning takes the last shot in a game that needs to be won and Patrick Ewing didn't touch the ball and was wide open, New York fans will bomb the Garden.
Yes, and
they will bomb.
Yes, and Charles Smith's 20-footer.
The sports section every Sunday night from 10 to midnight on 90.1 FM WUSB Stony Brook. Worth tuning in just to hear these guys argue. Worth calling in just to argue with them.
Girls, 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 girls all have something to say. Some say their emotions get in the way. Some like them big, some like them skinny. Oh, girls, who's come this way? We must unite, this is the play.
Listen to Unsported Live every second Saturday on 90.1 WUSB Stony Brook. From 9:30 to midnight, you can get it all here.
Masturbation.
Shopping. How to please a man.
Or a woman.
Basically, you can sport what you wanna.
That's right. This is Zabby from WUSB Stony Brook Radio. And all we want is some truth from these politicians. And we can get it by watching the Suffolk County Legislature on television. But they don't want to be on TV because they're hiding something from you. Well, hey, let's get together and demand that we get to see the Suffolk County Legislature on TV like we do every other level of government. Thank you so much for listening to Zabby's program Mondays, 1:30 p.m. till 2:30, A Woman's Perspective on Politics.
Billy, he's your average American boy. He goes to high school. He has a girlfriend, Jane. He's a star quarterback of his football team. What a throw. On his off time, he listens to his favorite radio program, The R.E.D. Show, every
Monday night, 6 to 7 p.m.
Where he hears his favorite in punk and alternative music. Those ripped jeans look good on you, Billy. Ha ha ha.
Howdy, this is Buddy Merriam, and you're listening to Bluegrass Time on WUSB 90.1 FM. You can tune in every Wednesday evening from 6:30 to 8 p.m. to hear some of the world's best music, bluegrass. That's 90 minutes of bluegrass from the first-generation masters like Bill Monroe, Flatten Scruggs, and the Stanley Brothers, to new releases by contemporary bluegrass artists, live-in-the-studio performances, interviews, and concert listings at 7 o'clock. That's every Wednesday night from 6:30 to 8 for Bluegrass Time on WUSB, Stony Brook.
Thank you.